mention that I'm an autistic adult myself, so I'm what we say in the autistic community of autistic people as an autistic autism researcher, or in other words, I'm autistic and I research autism at the same time. So I'm going to be talking about the implications of different trends in policy and services development for autistic adults and youth, more so on the adult side than the adolescent side, because that's where some of the largest gaps exist out there. I have no financial conflicts to report. Just a brief rundown of my presentation. Just going to be sharing really briefly how I view disability, which is important when you're talking about autism, since we often talk about it from more of a deficit model. The context in terms of different changes in policies and services advancement facing autistic adults and youth. And just a few key emerging trends that I wanted to point out that are really important for the backdrop of policy and services development for autistic people. So the disability model that I take is more of a social model, socio-ecological model of disability, as contrast to the deficit model you see in the vast majority of autism research, and particularly a neurodiversity model that says autistic people have both strengths and weaknesses. And in concert with this, a view that the increases you see out there are not an epidemic, but simply increases that make sense based on the fact that diagnostic changes for autism have changed service systems, cultural understanding. There's about 5 billion factors that have changed in the last 30, 40 years that have enhanced the understanding recognition of autism, but autistic people have been around forever. We've been around for society for a long time, but people have not understood that and did not see autism in the same way a long time ago. So the backdrop on policy change and service development that is facing autistic people and allies and supporters is that, and this was pointed out in some of the other presentations, is that there's a lack of infrastructure often around services and supports, and this gets worse as individuals age from adolescence, so in childhood adolescence into adult life. For adults, there's often almost nothing out there that helps with, say, access to employment, access to community living, access to a higher quality of life, access to higher education. And there are systematic healthcare barriers that exist that face autistic people that are different than the non-autistic population. I apologize that I hadn't put this on my slide, so I'm going to see if I can pull it up here, the actual spots. There's a paper that I cite here on the reference. You get the slides later on if you'd like. There's one paper that has discussed this in the autism research literature. Most of the literature is on children, that found recently by surveying autistic adults, I think about 200 versus non-autistic people, that there was much less satisfaction with patient-provider communication, healthcare self-efficacy, chronic condition self-advocacy, and much higher rates of unmet needs related to physical health, mental health, prescription medications, and lower self-reported rates of things like vaccinization. So really, really major challenges in even just basic healthcare access facing autistic adults. Not really studied that often because people have focused often more on disparities facing autistic youth and children and not really as much on the challenges facing adults. And of course, as I said, this is connected to broader community living and daily living and quality of life. So one of the three trends that I pointed out in the beginning is that the diagnostic criteria for autism have recently changed. For those in the know-how on that, you probably maybe know DSM, et cetera, but for those in the audience may not know, the DSM is the Diagnostic Manual, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Autism is in there more in some ways for historical reasons. It is not a psychiatric disability in the same way as, say, bipolar, schizophrenia, et cetera, is more of a neurological developmental disability, but it is included in there for the services access because basically any neurological disabilities are still included among this broader set of, if you will, of mental disorders. It's the first time the book has changed in 19 years majorly. There was a slight update in, I believe, about 2000, but in terms of major changes to the book, 94 was the last time they had published major revision of the book. And so it changed a lot of the criteria and particularly added what are known as severity scales to the book. And in the context of autism, the changes were unifying the diagnoses into one diagnostic identification, autism spectrum disorder, which the science has been saying for a long, long time, but it took the American Psychiatric Association a long time to publish this new book to be in line with the literature. And there's a belief, strong belief, that this could potentially open up and remove a lot of barriers to service systems in healthcare and developmental disability services, particularly for autistic people, for instance, who have had an Asperger's diagnosis or pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified, which is one of the existing diagnoses from the older book in 1994, an autism diagnosis. Those folks often did not have access to services as well as they should because of those diagnoses. Now, on the flip side, the severity scales, if used inappropriately, may cause barriers. They were not intended to say, well, you have level one autism, level two, level three. It's not supposed to work like that. But there's a little bit of concern the severity scales could be a limiting factor with access to services. Alongside the change in the DSM definitions, there's also been a growing development of service systems that can for autistic adults across the country. In some cases, it's been changes in existing developmental disability services funded by Medicaid to for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities broadly. In some cases, it's been a growth of autism-specific services. For instance, I'm going to highlight in particular the models in Pennsylvania. And the reason we did autism-specific services is because we're one of the few states where our developmental disability services were exactly intellectual disability services. That's the only diagnosis that you could have to get into the services, to the extent where some folks were given intellectual disability diagnosis who didn't really, you know, it didn't really fit them. They did not have intellectual disability. Maybe they had all different types of disabilities. Maybe they had autism. Maybe they're autistic without an intellectual disability co-occurring. And so to address this situation, we created separate autism service systems within our broader DD system, but they're kind of separated from the rest of the intellectual disability system. And these two systems are known as ACAP and AAW, Autism Community, Adult Community Autism Program, I believe is what ACAP stands for, and AAW is Adult Autism Waiver. They're both funded through Medicaid, home and community-based services waiver systems. And one of them is a Medicaid managed care model in the case of ACAP. One, Adult Autism Waiver, is more of a statewide system that you see that's similar to other home and community-based Medicaid waivers for people with developmental disabilities. And we have the two different models to be trying out and see what maybe works better. The benefit of this system versus some of the other systems for autistic adults around the country is there's no requirement on IQ, so there's no requirement for intellectual disability or any particular IQ level. But like a lot of the other, or like all of them across the country, all other developmental disability systems, there is a requirement among these two service systems for what's called as ICF level of functioning. Stands for Intermediate Care Facility. It basically means institutional level of functioning, because developmental disability services funded through Medicaid came out of moving folks from institutions, and the models are still built around that. And I point this out particularly as a barrier to access versus removing IQ was removing a barrier, saying you could all you needed was autism diagnosis. But there's many, 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 many thousands of autistic adults who are not able to access these services in Pennsylvania. I know many, many colleagues. I would otherwise benefit from some of these services to enhance some of my own quality of life, but I also don't meet the level of care standard. And it was an interesting almost irony with that, because I helped with creating the one of these systems, actually. I helped create the Adult Autism Waiver. I was on the advisory board committee for that. And one of the things I've talked about with the government agency that runs these systems centrally, Bureau of Autism Services, we're one of the few states in the country that has a specific agency in our Human Services Department, Public Welfare, for autism, is that folks may not be able to access services at times because of the level of care barrier. And what do we do about that? And these are folks that may not need 16, 24 hours worth of access. They may only need two or three kind of here or there during the week, which may be the difference between getting employment or not, and maybe falling into really undesirable situations, maybe ending up, say, in a problematic situation that leads someone to enter, for instance, into the justice system where they shouldn't have been. And maybe if they had services, maybe that wouldn't have happened with that undesirable outcome. And the last thing I wanted to emphasize, it wasn't on my original abstract, so I apologize on that, but I wanted to add it because I had recently completed my dissertation research, and I wanted to make sure there was something along the policy on bullying that I did, which is really connected broadly to services even for adults, because bullying can also happen in the workplace and in the community. Although I study particularly school-age youth and do plan to study bullying further down for groups of individuals as they get older into adulthood, past my dissertation work. So there is a lack of literature in those other areas, by the way, also, is that there is more literature, as you would see, bullying overall for school-age youth with disabilities, and even school-age youth without disabilities. There's a lot of literature on that, not much on workplace bullying. And I want to discuss some of the policy implications of the study that I did. And what I did is I conducted semi-structured interviews with 13 autistic youth aged 13 to 18 in three different geographic areas, the D.C. area, central Pennsylvania, and Mississippi. And I found these barriers it was a qualitative study, so these are kind of just issues that I found for this study as well laid out rather than quantitative data because this is qualitative. I found systematic barriers that individuals face to report bullying at times to teachers, parents, and authorities, and to actually address bullying. It was actually a kind of a surprising finding to me that I thought individuals would have strategies to address bullying that's been going on. People have had recognition bullying problems for a long time, and I was bullied extensively when I was a kid, but I figured a lot had changed since then. Some of the literature maybe suggested some changes across the country in schools. And yet the widespread quote-unquote strategy was just to ignore bullying or walk away from it. And as some of you all may know, if you have any background in psychology, et cetera, and educational work, that's easier said than done. That's not the best practice overall at times for dealing with bullying. There are ways to strategies on things you need to say to a bully. If someone's being aggressive to you, if they're punching you, hitting you, it's really hard to just ignore that, right? If there's, for instance, a size difference. So it really was striking to me, and it fit into the policy implications for schools that they need to better promote how they can have practices to be handling bullying of autistic youth. But it also fits into when I'll be looking, and for organizations looking at this, and when I look into this from the broader research sense of how organizations in the community, how employers, you know, companies can be addressing bullying and thinking about how adults with disabilities and autistic adults in particular, just like youth, may not have access to a wealth of strategies to be handling bullying. And how do we deal with that? What kind of policies do we want to be thinking about how individuals can be marginalized at work? How does it look different than school, where it's a structured situation, you can take care of these things, versus in the workplace, for instance, you can't take care of it as easily. And it does have a major impact. It's related to health, because the bullying has a really major impact on, negative impact on health, quality of life, and well-being, and for instance, educational achievement in the case of school, and workplace productivity. And so in conclusion, there's major emerging developments in both service systems and diagnostic criteria around autism. This has large implications for policy and practice to be improving the health and wellness of autistic adults and youth, and it requires greater interdisciplinary collaboration to be addressing systematic barriers that exist and be starting to address, for instance, some of the healthcare disparities. When I say there's one study around that in context, we need more literature on this, and we do spend hundreds of millions of dollars at the federal level and then much money at the state level, but often not as well focusing on adults as youth. For instance, there's a federal legislation that allocates about $230 million, including, for instance, the lens are in there, in federal autism legislation, but only a very small amount of that is focused on autistic adults on these kind of issues that I've mentioned in the presentation. So thank you very much. Just